this country's not going to be saved from the top, because that's where all the rot is. It's too deep. It's going to be saved from the grassroots.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guest from Central Victoria. Welcome, Neville Archibald.
Yeah, good morning, Arnie. Good to see you. It's not a bad time to be around at springtime, watching the grass grow.
You can actually watch the grass grow.
Like it's just in the hill, I reckon.
my grass in the paddock is 5 foot, and I've got to, and I say 5 foot, it's above my head. My brother told me the other day, because he walked through the paddock to get to the house, so I have to get out there and cut it down. And I will after this weekend, because those who are in the know, we've got our national weekend in Adelaide this coming weekend. And some of the travellers will be covering quite a bit of distance. So we're asking God's blessing on the weekend, but also His travelling mercies for those that are travelling. And hope it's a successful weekend. Okay, now the issue for today, for this week, I've had a look at certain things, in a sense that where are we in the nature of if you like, the communist world revolution, where are we in regard to that? Where are we in the nature of our own nation, Australia? And of course, in regard to our position in the world today with other countries, what are the similarities unfolding, and are they essentially orchestrated? And to me, I find it interesting, because just before went live this morning, we brought up the subject of what's going on in Western Australia. And I think, to me, that's an important point. Just put the link in there, command copy, and I'll put it here so that you can give me a backdrop. What's going on in Western Australia is that sovereign citizens are being targeted by the West Australian government, the police, as essentially a terrorist group. And I find it fascinating, because they have their points of view, they argue their points of view. I don't agree with them, but that's not the point. The point is that they choose to argue from their position, from their understanding of the law, their understanding of the Constitution, and that type of thing. And a lone gunman, Desi Freeman in Victoria, is accused of shooting dead two policemen, shooting and injuring a third policeman. And on the basis of that, the whole group is designated terrorist and domestic terrorist, and then is their guns are seized. And of course, the Western Australian flavour is that they're Victoria, is they're right up front with what they're doing. Bringing into fruition, if you like, the police state. Now, it's not just Western Australia or Victoria, whatever. It's not just them. It's also happening in England, Canada, United States, and Europe. And of course, this is the free world that is surrendering their guns and imposing of a pseudo martial law. Now, you may not see it in Australia. Oh, they've just taken the sovereign citizens' guns away in Western Australia. But you've got to take it into account that you've got the likes of what's going on in America, and of course the digital ID. This is the clamp down on the world, where they're going to stop you from objecting. And if you do object, you're going to lose potentially your digital currency, your access to your bank accounts, access to the internet, whatever. They're going to stop you from actually participating in society and take away your guns, because you're a, if you like, inverted commas, proscribed. They're deemed by the minister that you're proscribed, and then it goes from there. So to me, it's a really important to look at it. This is essentially the imposition of martial law, or if you like, a state of martial law over the citizenry. It's quite a challenging time. It's quite a threatening time, where your government is actually going, seriously going to restrain you and restrict your actions. This to me is a not a good sign. It's certainly not a good sign. And the fact is that the, as far as I know, I didn't readily know this. I scan a dozen newspapers a day, and until it was brought up in conversation, I did not know that it had actually occurred on Australian soil. Anyway, your thoughts, please, Neville Archibald.
Yeah, I've sort of looked at it. I heard it. It came up on my feed. And again, like you, I scan all sorts of stuff just to see what's going on. And I just found the parallels. Sometimes you think, is it such a parallel? We're only talking about guns here in Western Australia at this point. But they were law-abiding citizens. They had legally owned guns, legally stored guns. And they were targeted for an idea, concept, because they believed that the government, and, you know, like you said, I don't agree with everything the sovereign citizens say, but I do believe that they've got a right to gripe about the government. What does that amount to? Well, it amounts to, you know, in some cases, they think that they don't want to be a part of that system anymore, and they want to opt out. And there's a lot of people wanting to opt out because a lot of people shake their head when they see government doing things, and it's like, that's just ridiculous. Why should they do that? You know, I feel that that's infringing upon my freedoms. We've seen these marches throughout Australia with freedom marches for all the same reasons, because they're sick and tired of being told what to do. And you've got that opinion. So, okay, next election, we change it. But in the meantime, you're allowed to talk about things. You're allowed to discuss why you feel that way, surely. But it so appears that, you know, the act of one person who is alleged to have done something is now being used to go in and seize the guns of these law-abiding registered owners who are doing the right thing with their guns generally. And seizing them. And, you know, it's a thin edge of the wedge when you start doing those sorts of things for people who are thought to be doing something wrong. It's like it's preemptive. And that immediately took me back to Trump's countering domestic terrorism and organized political violence. Now, that document was sometime last year when Trump put that in. And basically that is the violence of the citizens. And it sounds good, you know, domestic violence, domestic terrorism and political violence. Yep, it all sounds good. But the problem is it covers everybody. Everybody is then under surveillance. And then there's some sort of a person there has to make a decision that, well, they haven't done it yet, but we need to step in. And, of course, everybody thinks, oh, well, that's great because you know, you've got your terrorist organisations, your terrorist cells. But then you see what's happening in Australia with the guns being taken off people because they are thought to have some association with the sovereign citizens. I don't know what's happening in America. It'd be very interesting to see. But I have heard read posts from there that, you know, they are doing things like that without any real proof. It takes me back to the Minority Report. I don't know if you've ever seen that, where they have a Tom Cruise film, but they have a police force that, you know, predicts that in a month's time you're going to commit a crime, so they lock you up first or remove you from the system first so that you can't do it, even though it hasn't happened. It's a dystopian film. But that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a dystopia. And it's not just America. Canada has a policy in. There's a copy there with the Juno Times that Arnie brought up. And they were talking about where are we? It allows Melanie Jolly, who is, I'm assuming, the Karen over there, to kick off anyone off the internet with no trial, no warrant. First, you won't be allowed to say you've been kicked off. This is an emergency measures act for steroids. Steroids only permanent and secret. Now, that's one of the Conservative MPs, Mr. Matt Strauss, who highlighted three different sections of that bill. So basically, if the government thinks that you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, like criticizing them, they have the power to take you off. You could be a prescribed person. There's vague sort of descriptions in the bill of who you are, and vague sort of descriptions about offences you might commit. You know, we really are getting away from, you know, innocent until proven guilty. There was another one as well. I think the EU is looking at introducing policy whereby when you touch down, anyone who's not an EU citizen, which means, you know, Australians as well, New Zealand, whoever, who happen to go over there will be fingerprinted and facial ID'd when they come in, and will be tracked from that point on so that they can be, you know, if they overstay their 90-day visa or whatever it is, the 90-day period they've come in for, they can be found fairly quickly and deported. All this on the back of how many thousands of migrants, how many millions of migrants have come in illegally and are still there and you know, supposedly welcomed with open arms. So, you know, you, the it's interesting how we've gone from when you commit a crime, you're prosecuted, to well, we think you might commit a crime and we're going to prosecute you anyway. And that, to me, is the thin edge of the wedge with the digital age that we're heading into. If we go for the digital ID, like Keir Starmer's looking at the UK, and like they've been talking about here, then, you know, our every move will be tracked, and it will be possible to do that because it's possible to do it now. I can follow your phone and track you. So, you know, you've got to think just how close we're getting now to that ability to be able to track you at all points. And what sort of authoritarian overreach are they already doing without it? How much more would it be amplified if they had that ability? That's what scares me most. And it's, if it was just one country, you know, and just one little thing, it'd be, oh, that's interesting. That's a bit of a strange thing. I hope the population carries on and stops it. But it's every free Western country that is doing the same thing when you start to look into it. If that doesn't, you know, if that doesn't sing some sort of organized approach to dealing with it, there's something wrong. So that's my take on it anyway. Thanks, Arnie.
No worries. Thank you for that, Neville. I've just got a link up. I think it is relevant to now. It's in regard to the anti-communist referenda held in 1951 in Australia. And the point, the League argued, even though it was firmly anti-communist, it did not agree with placing that amount of power into the hands of the federal government. And so the League campaigned against the 1951 referenda to outlaw the Communist Party, because the Commonwealth could be just as treacherous, in fact, more so than anything that the civilians could do under a powers like this, under powers like this. Very, very important. Now, the point, what is the point? The point is that the government is now prescribing organisations. The government is now deeming that we will outlaw these organisations, and we will confiscate their guns, and we will strip them of, if depending on which government you're going to, but we'll strip them of internet access, of banking access. You won't even be allowed to report on the fact that you've had these powers exercised from you. And this, to me, is the, it's not playing a game anymore. This is serious business. The government is actually doing these things, will do these things, and they're saying that preemptively you are a person of risk, and therefore we're going to stop you from doing any of these things because you are a person of risk. Who determines risk? I think, seriously, if you look at the problems we have with government, it is government overreach, not underreach. It is not the civilian population that is the threat to Australia's security and essentially national identity. It is the government who's imposing these things. And to me, the the point of the 1951 referendum was that the Australian people voted no. They voted no to give the Commonwealth these type of policed state powers. And the League, as I said, fought against the power being handed to the Commonwealth, fought against that referendum, and rightly so. I would fight against it even today. Exactly the same criteria. This to me is very, very important that we consider the likes of at this point in time, where we've got a vacillating, and I say that unreservedly, a vacillating Liberal Party, where it doesn't know what it believes. It doesn't know what it believes anymore. And the thing is that the Reds under the bed are controlling the Liberal Party. And the essential point in Victoria, the opposition, the Liberal Party in Victoria, in South Australia, in Western Australia, what are they doing? I mean, seriously, they are no longer conservative. They are out and out socialist parties. And the point is that on this basis, you have one party essentially proscribing the other party, that you can't exist. And then we're in the one-party state in a heartbeat. This is how quickly it can happen. I know that Turkey several years ago, I wrote about the changes that were taking place in Turkey at the time, and they became a dictatorship. And so the methodology is certainly there. It's tried, it's tested, and each country can introduce the type of legislation that they need in order to implement their dictatorship. And that's exactly what they are doing. And this to me is very, very important. We've got to look at these things. We're going into a very precarious political situation in Australia. It's not no different in Canada or UK, USA. It's no different in New Zealand. It's no different in all the and the European Union. It's no different. It's essentially to prescribe any civil activity as unlawful, and therefore to limit your powers, as they tried in Canada with the truckers. They tried and implemented it, even though it was determined by the High Court to be unconstitutional. There was no now, what would you call it? There was no recompense, I think that's the word, to the truckers. There was no restitution to the damage done to the businesses and the loss of this and the loss of that. None of it. But the point is that it was tried and tested, and this is how we're going to do it. And this is what's happening right now in a nation near you. Very, very important. And that's why I say you go back to the referenda, you go back to the powers that be that Australian governments have tried to implement in order to control, in order to monopolize power in the hands of the Commonwealth. And this, even though the states are doing it, they're doing it in unison with the Commonwealth. And this to me is very, very important. I say this, and I don't say it lightly. Hasty, if you're ever going to get off the pot, now is the time to get off the pot, leave the Liberal Party, and form a genuine Conservative Party in Australia. Anyway, your thoughts, please, Neville.
Yeah, Arnie, you're right there. I couldn't believe Dutton sticking his head up and having a go at Hasty. You know, like, Hasty's actually speaking sense from a Conservative point of view. He's speaking what you would traditionally think of as the Liberal Party, but I mean, been so long gone that it's about time someone did speak up. He's got more than enough backing. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people who'd follow him, and he could quite rightly do so. But if he hasn't got the gumption to get up and split and take a whole heap of people with him, I think he's going to fix the problem from the inside. There's just too many. How do you say it? I'd like to call them traitors, but, you know, I'd probably get into trouble if I did that, so I won't call them traitors.
Call them fifth column, Neville.
They're fifth columnists, yeah.
They're fifth column.
you can go back to Menzies. Menzies was the one, correct me if I'm wrong, Menzies was the one that was pushing for the elimination or the banning of the Communist Party.
That's
and
right.
He was a little back then. So you look at that and you think, well, hang on, I would sort of, we go back to Menzies. You know, that was when he was a real liberal. Well, it was in part then they were still looking for more power. The other thing that brought up was quite funny. It's not funny, but it is. I got in on the tail end of Canberra self-government. Now, before Canberra had its own government, before it became its own state, it was a territory, and it had ministers, and that was it.
It still is a territory, Neville.
It may okay, right, so still a territory, but it has its own self-government now, which it didn't have before, and it has a government, so it can then be, ruled. The people of Canberra didn't really want self-government because they knew it would come with increased taxes and all sorts of things that they weren't prepared to put up with. They were quite happy being a territory and being looked after. But with the election, of course, we had a couple of parties standing. We had the usual Labor and Liberal and whatnot, but we also had a no self-government party who loudly proclaimed that if they got in, they'd abolish it. They got in and they quickly became the yes self-government. So, you know, you think to yourself, you know, as you were saying before, Arnie, it only takes two parties to agree and suddenly you've only got a one party, you've got a uni party or they abolish anyone else. we've seen it happen. We saw it happen in Canberra where you had two parties, one saying we're not going to be there. And as soon as they got in, they turned around and they were the yes self-government party, not the no self-government party. And therefore, ACT government was then cemented in place. You don't have to look all that far from home to see what is possible. You know, the never ever GST of Johnny Howard, you know, after the big schmozzle with John Hewson trying to explain his birthday cake and what would be taxed and what wouldn't. And, you know, at that point, going to the election, no, we're never going to do that. We've been bitten. We're not going to do it. And, of course, he gets in and he does it. And we've seen that so often. People they must have short memories not to see it because they keep electing the same pack of people in. That so I agree, Arnie. You know, I'm hasty. Yeah, get off your butt. Get on to Jacinta Price and Canavan and all the others, Brad Batten, all those that are standing up and saying sensible things, and take back our country, mate.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is that I don't even believe, Neville, whether they start a new party or not, I don't know. I really couldn't care less about the party. But the point is that if they stand up, that gives the Australian people
something to follow.
Something to endorse. And at the same time, you look at the vote going to Pauline, and I don't know whether, I mean, seriously, a party dictatorship run like that, there's nothing that comes from the ground floor. It's only through her advisors, and she has the final say. And so that essentially is a party dictatorship, right? And while they might be saying some things, when they're in power, they may be doing completely different. What's the point? The point to me is that, as I said in the Target a couple of weeks back, if Hastie doesn't look at a financial policy, and I mean a Commonwealth Development Bank, it's a separate entity that answers to the government and does the bidding of the government. If they don't look at a financial policy that's actually going to stop government renting money from private banks, because that's what they do, they rent the money, they pay interest on every single cent that comes into existence in Australia. And this, to me, this is where we're completely wrong. We've got usury going everywhere. They're exploiting money, renting it to the government. The government should issue its own money. That's what it should do. And it's not doing these things. The government is just, what is it? It's lost its modus. It's lost its mojo. That's what it's done. It's lost its mojo, and it's essentially insisting that it should have more power, when in actual fact, No, get back to what you're constituted to do and actually do the right thing by the people. But it's not. It won't. It doesn't have the heart. And this to me is the thing that's most apparent. The government doesn't really have the heart to do the right thing by the people. It only does the bidding of worldly powers that want world control. And this is the point that's before us all. You know, that the governments are not doing the bidding of the people. The people don't control their nations. We're electing dictatorships. And to me, we've got to think again. We've got to seriously think again. I saw something in the news. I've been reading, in a sense, I've got too many irons in the fire at the moment with National Weekend coming up, but it was to do with the fact that the government itself is just way beyond its bounds. It meets and bounds of where the government is legitimate. It was the Christian church. It was actually the unction of Christ, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. That legitimized government. But then it said, but unto God the things that are God's. And so the meets and bounds have to be in the area where government is there and it's got its legitimate meets and bounds. But if a person, if an individual, one person, let alone the whole population, doesn't have enough time and resources available to render unto God the things that are God's, then the role of government is actually circumventing the role of the church. It is overstaying is overstepping the mark. And this to me is an important point that we've got to consider in the heady days ahead, because from here it won't get any better. What it will do is it will get progressively worse and worse and worse until you lose your ability to speak. You lose your platform on the internet, which essentially is the alternative media. If you've got weapons, you'll lose those. And if you've got banking, you'll lose those. All these things that the government's getting ready, putting in place to come down on you like a ton of bricks in order to control you. And this to me is this is the undoing of essentially democratic Westminster system of government. We're all going to elected dictatorships, and that's a very important point. And you say, because they're taking guns off of Western Australian people. No, it's because they're prescribing an organisation, and then they're then taking the guns. They haven't taken them to court. They haven't demonstrated that these people are acting illegally or unconstitutionally, or their fifth column. They haven't done any of those things in order to substantiate. They're preemptively acting. This is the same in Canada, in New Zealand, in America, England, the lot, through Europe. This is preemptive legislation. And that's, you wonder why Donald Trump is getting away with what he's getting away with. It's because he's imposing essentially a military dictatorship over the United States. And that's, to me, that's an important point. It's not something you can treat lightly. Oh, Donald's fine. He's just erratic. No, he's not. It's much more than that. He's much more sinister. And the likes of, look at the recent demonstrations with Hamas and the Israelis, in capital cities, whatever, around the place. And the government, even though the Labor government says, they're pro-Hamas, a two-state solution, et cetera, but they're actually putting in place the things to shut down debate, completely shut down debate. And, of course, they're looking absurd because the state of Palestine is that it's essentially in crumbs, it's dust. That's all it is. It's been bombed into oblivion and the people are living in tents. And of course, the biggest weaponry, the most prolific weaponry in the world, United States, is supplying Israel with whatever it likes. And before 1948. So it's not even 100 years, 80 years, not even 80 years. And before 1948, the State of Israel did not exist in Palestine. And yet here it is, across the course of nearly 80 years, they've completely taken over that nation and driven the occupiers of that nation for thousands of years. They've driven them out of their home. And so to me, the whole point, is the world is skewered. It's essentially upside down. And now the trigger mechanisms, the Desi Freeman, he's a trigger mechanism to impose gun restrictions on law-abiding citizens. And similar to the Port Arthur event, where Martin Bryant was blamed for the slaughtering of 35 people, and that was a trigger mechanism to take away automatic weapons, also to impose a national registry, et cetera, et cetera. Trigger mechanisms, an event that caused an imposition of a essentially steps towards the totalitarian state. This is where we're going. This is what we're facing. And it's quite sinister. It is quite sinister. And the people who are calling the shots on this have every intention of bringing about the the world police state. The answer, to me, the answer that we've got to look at, it's all right saying these things, but we've got to actually bring it back. What is the answer for the people of Australia and every other nation? It is to bring your government back to limited constitutional government. It is to adhere to the requirements of those constitutions, abide by them, and be answerable to the people. Now, the party system has essentially made the situation, the voting situation, absurd, because there's polarity between parties, but the uniparty is really the truth of the two major parties. The uniparty, it's bringing about one party to rule them all. Anyway, your thoughts, please, Neville.
I liken it to a game of tug and war, a picnic. You got two teams, the Liberal and the Labor, and they've got this white flag in the middle of the rope, and they've got to pull it over a certain area, and everybody's there. We're all spectators, and we're all watching them pull this way and pull that way, and the white piece stays exactly where it is. And meanwhile, somebody's behind us helping themselves to the picnic, and you come back and there's nothing left. And that's, pretty much the way I see it. But the other thing I thought was interesting, I mean, we've got Labor governments, and, we've got certainly in Victoria, where Desi's been, he's on the news a bit now, isn't he? We've mentioned him all this time. Where they deem somebody to have done something, or, he's accused of something, there's no proof, nothing's been to court yet. But now everybody who's associated with or talks about sovereign citizens has now been demonised. We saw the hit piece done by the ABC, the Four Corners program on sovereign citizens and whatnot. But that's successful. They've done it well. And you think, that's the Labor government doing this. So that we expect them to be heavy-handed. That's just what you expect from the Labor Party. The Liberals will be different. They're not going to deem that this prescribed group is bad. That's a Labor thing. And this is what you hear from people who support the Liberals. And yet, the very word deem is very interesting, because remember Maura deeming? She's a Liberal in Victoria, and she stood up for women's rights and stood on the steps of Spring Street and had a speech. And a few so-called Nazis turned up and had a protest as well. And the Liberal Party at that time deemed that she was okay with that. And they then put her in that same category, and they kicked her out of the Liberal Party. They caused all sorts of issues for her for simply being in that place at that time. And they've done exactly the same thing as they've done with every sovereign citizen. They've said that, they're all redeemings. They're on the same platform as, somebody who wasn't really nice. So we're going to criticise them. So it's within the Liberal Party. The Liberal Party do these things too. Don't for one minute think that if we change government to another party like that, that any of this stuff's going to go away. They're both the same. What was the other thing you said? The overreach that the government is pushing for, more and more and more power all the time. Yes, that's right. But the one thing they don't want any part of or any power over seems to be the money, which I think is very interesting. If they were asking for power and pushing for power for themselves or for their view of our country, surely they would be pushing to have control of the money as well. But like you said, they're happy just renting it from international finance. We should be doing it ourselves. It's our wealth. It belongs to us. We should not be renting it from somebody. And I don't know what that tells you, but it certainly tells me that they are not interested in power for themselves. They're interested in power for some other purpose. And as we were talking before with the steps towards a global state, with all the digital things being rolled out across every free country in the world, I think that's it's becoming so much more obvious. It's very hard not to see it now. It's and people have to start waking up. They have to consider what they say at times and how they act. I had a couple of interactions recently that have been interesting in that trying to pay for something or do something in person is becoming increasingly difficult with government departments. Whether they want to accept your money or not, some of them reluctantly do so. Dirty stuff. I wouldn't do it if I didn't have to. The attitude of a receptionist in a lot of places, or not everybody, granted, there are nice people amongst them, but I've also seen the other side, and there are those there who think they're entitled. It's my job. I'll do what I think I'm doing. You come in and you ask for help, and it's like, well, it's all online. You can do it online. It's like they're pushing you away from their job. They're saying, well, you know, we're not here. We've already done all this online. You can deal with this online. It's like, well, the reason I'm in here is because I can't deal with it online. And it's a begrudging thing. They make you feel little and small. And if you get upset about it, they're the ones that seem to have the entitled opinion that, oh, well, you shouldn't be upset at us. That's not fair to us. We feel threatened. We feel like we're not being appreciated. Well, yeah, damn right you're not being appreciated if you're not doing your job. When I was a receptionist, and I was a receptionist for a little while, off and on, we were taught to be courteous, polite, and look to do the best you can for the person that's coming through the door. That's the whole point of being there, to facilitate the person coming through that door to get what they want. But, people have got to start thinking, okay, well, somebody's here because they want to pay something in cash, got a question. Help them. Don't sit back and say, oh, well, you know, everybody should be doing it online, because number one, you're doing yourself out of a job. And number two, you're not really creating any social cohesion. You're really alienating people. And I think there's a lot of people out there who have the idea that it's all right because someone else can do it, or, it's not going to affect me. We're going to go to a cashless society because it's going to be so much easier. We don't have to handle dirty money. We don't have to, you know, see people face to face, and we seem to be becoming increasingly socially isolated. And I think part of that comes with the territory of the direction that the government is pushing us. They're trying to make us socially isolated so that we can't band together and talk about things. I'd just like to put a request to those who are listening that if you're in a position where you're talking with people or doing things, have a bit of compassion. Think about things and consider the implications of everything that's going on around you. Is it for the better? Are you partaking in something that is to the detriment of society? And if you are, why? You know, you may need a job But there are different ways you can act within that job to certainly help keep society coherent, cohesive. And I think that's one thing we have to work upon. And I think if there's a message at all from what I'm trying to say is that we need to talk, we need to get together, we need to discuss things rationally, not get on our high horses, not have a formed opinion before you even start talking to somebody. Listen and try to help others. That's the point. And if the government's not there to help, if they're there to, every time you do something that they think is wrong, to limit you with the digital platforms that we work with now, then that's definitely not going to bring about a society that I want to see. Thanks, Anna.
No worries. Thank you, Neville. I was just going through Jova's website. And on her website, there's a Boris Johnson article there where he actually apologises for his strong historical position. I think it was to do with COP31, I think. And the point is the politician who's actually apologising, even though what he says doesn't make any difference. But it does, in the sense that the people can at least consider the ramifications. But yes, he was wrong. He admits it, and yet he was driving the whole world to go in a certain direction. Now, that to me is an important point to understand that, in that the things that you're told, things that you read about, you've got to take them into account that you may be being driven to a certain direction. And if you had the open, candid discussions with more people around you and brought these issues up, you may find that others are thinking of like mind. And that's really important in the heady days ahead. And don't think they won't come. They're right here. They're here now. They're on our doorstep. And the heady days ahead is Willis said. We need to talk. We need to work this through. We need to look to our constitution, abide by the rule of law, and do our darndest to hold on, because this is where the world is going. It's in a precarious state. It's being driven into this situation. Don't think it's not. It has been. It is being. And the other side of it too is that in the the heady days ahead, you never know how close the enemy is to capitulating, that they haven't got it their own way. They've failed. They've made a mess of it. Like Boris Johnson, they may eventually tire of the whole thing and think this is not going to work. We have to regroup and try again in another 100 or 1,000 years or whatever, because this is how long their plans take to come to fruition. This is how long they actually work through. It's not across the one generation. I know that my understanding of political events, I go back to the archives, I go back to search engines. I've got a bona fide search engine on my computer, and I search my archives. And that gives me a strong sense of what was going on, and a sanitized artificial intelligence algorithm that's going to work things through. I don't trust them. I don't believe in them. To me the point I'm saying is that our efforts to do what we do, some work well, some don't. Some appear to take us ahead, and yet they may or may not do what you want them to do. But the thing is that you must keep trying. You must keep experimenting. You must keep putting things out there to test waters, because as I said before, you never know how close the enemy is to capitulating. Now, the League has got, I'm changing subject now, the League has got the National Weekend this weekend. We are hoping to stream live through Zoom. There will be a link on the front page. I'll put that up there. I'll probably put it up there today. I think after the website is updated, I'll put the on target up, Fridays on target, and we're just above my head, that riding above the video. That's the one that I'll put it in that position, so that you know that the league seminar this weekend occurring on Saturday afternoon, South Australian time, the summertime. We are in summertime, so South Australian summertime, daylight saving time, at 1:30 through till 4:30, roughly like that. We may also stream on Sunday, in which case go back to the webpage and have another look, because I'll put the link up there to it. We've got there, as I said before, this is what we're doing this weekend. It's a busy time. We've got people travelling. We ask for travelling mercies, God's abundance, to look after the people and enjoy the weekend. To me, it's a time of fellowship and regeneration, and what else? Sharing a bit of pleasure with like-minded people. So I know it's early, but I'm okay with that. I think we've covered the subject matter, which is essentially the imposition of the totalitarian state by our governments. This is what they're doing. Don't think not, they are. And it's right throughout the Western-speaking world. I'm sure it's already in a firmer fall behind the Iron Curtain, which supposedly is not there, but in actual fact, what happened was the Iron Curtain fell because the worldly powers were going to impose communism on the whole world. That's why the Iron Curtain fell. And you can see the truth of that statement, the likes of what's actually going on right now. So fearlessly preaching the truth, speaking the truth to power. This weekend is about the, let me think, what was it, what was it called? That's right, the will to power, the will to freedom, very much a part of the fight ahead of us. Thank you so much, Neville, for today. This is Arnie Luke signing off from the Crossroads. Cheers then.
Thanks, guys.
This country's not going to be saved from the top, because that's where all the rot is. It's too deep. It's going to be saved from the grassroots.